90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before. Never been done
in this
before.
Country.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I wanted to talk to a couple of people who are fixtures in the community here in the Bay Area. We haven't had them on during this past couple of months, but their wisdom is definitely appreciated, and their impact has been felt. We're talking about Baba Greg Hodges, Baba Arnold Perkins, and Arnold has a son, Daryl, with him, who is also having some impact with a project that he started. I ran into Arnold Perkins earlier this week during the Farce of July celebration, and they were giving out masks at the lake, and it was there that he was telling me about the African American Response Circle, or ARC, that they have been putting together, which is really trying to craft out an agenda that we can circle around as we move into the 2020 elections. So it's good to have you all on. Good to see you, Arnold. Good to see you, Brother Greg, and good to see you, Daryl. Let's start off. Let's talk a little bit about this this agenda in this African-American circle. Who wants to start with that? I'll go with you, Greg.
Okay. Well, first of all, David, thank you for having us on. Thank you for doing the work you've been doing, reporting the news that really matters in our community. So we really appreciate you and the opportunity to talk about this a little bit. African American Response Circle began out of the recognized need by folks in the Black community that we need to do something for ourselves in the midst of this COVID pandemic. We already knew before really the numbers started coming in is that we would be disproportionately impacted because of pre-existing health conditions and fundamentally because of white supremacy, because of structural racism in America. And so anytime something happens to the country, African Americans, Native Americans, others, Latinx folks, we have to respond very differently. And so the idea was what could we do in addition to making demands of our city and county and federal government around the kind of safety net that we need to have. We also said, what can we do for ourselves? And so we, in early April, started convening a group that started with about 25 leaders from around the city. Some of those leaders are formal leaders, you know, elected officials. Some of those leaders are leaders because they rise to the capacity at a moment in the community. And with those folks, we began to think about and act on what we thought was things that made a difference. Like, what is our fundamental health and wellness in a crisis like this in terms of PPEs, you know, in terms of protective equipment and messaging? What is it going to be like for our kids who aren't in school, losing time from classrooms that often don't serve them, but it's better than sitting around the house? To look at the economic plight of our Black businesses, that we know that as many as half of our businesses might fail if we don't do something. And so instead of us sitting around and wringing our hands and gnashing our teeth, we did something that Bob Arnold's been pushing for years. Daryl's probably heard this more than a couple times, that we're not outnumbered, we outorganized. I'm taking his line, so, you know, but we pull folks together, and, you know, and the other thing that has come out of that, and I'll let Bob Arnold talk about this too, is that we created a fund at the East Bay Community Foundation that we put money into. We started with a small matching grant, a match challenge to our colleagues, put money on the table, and then said to folks, can we match that? And so with the partnership of East Bay Community Foundation, we've begun this fund, and we hope that will become be a permanent thing and not just be something that we look at in the immediacy of the COVID virus.
You've been doing a lot of work, healing work, racial justice work for a long time. Did you see us moving in this direction? And I ask this because talking to people, they said the number one thing that Black people need to start doing is investing in their survival. And I'm hearing this from like former Black Panthers, people that were down with the BLMA. You know, I mean, this is the thing they're saying, you know, get your guns, get your food, get your shelter, get your network. And it wasn't on some conspiracy thing. I think they said that Katrina was a shot against the bow that said, we better start preparing. So from the work that you've been doing, was that the type of tide you were seeing, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, we've been seeing it all over the country. Because Bob Arnold and I and others, you know, that we know move around quite a bit, and we get to see what's happening not only here, but what's happening in other parts of the world. And for us as African Americans, we know that pendulum swings, you know, back and forth toward a less intense form of racism and a more intense form of racism. And so I think we generally know that we need to be prepared. And, you know, and the thing that's interesting about this, over the last 150 years, as Garvey and other African nationalists talked about, like, what we need to do for self, this idea of Kuja Chagulia, self-determination, comes out of Nguzo Saba. We talk about it during Kwanzaa. So now we're actually being forced as a community to look at these principles and put them into action. Cooperative economics, how can we support each other in our businesses? The MyReceipts.com piece that Daryl's going to talk about maybe is part of that. You know, how do we use our wealth? And so I think we've been watching a slow burn. It's sort of like that famous metaphor of a frog in water. Put it on top of the stove, turn it on, the frog never jump out the water. The frog will jump out the water, won't ever jump out the water, even when the water becomes boiling, because it has become accustomed to that environment. It has become accustomed to the poverty. It's been accustomed to the police harassment and state-sponsored violence and what we do to ourselves. So I think that we've been on this trajectory, on this arc, if you will, for a long time. And I think that it's a moment where we have to demonstrate to not only ourselves, but to our children who haven't even been born yet, that we have concerns about their well-being, about our survival. They go beyond politics, that go beyond the little fractures we have between fraternities and sororities and what denomination are you. It's really a Malcolm moment, you know, where he said, you're not catching hell because you're a Buddhist, you're not catching hell because you're a Kappa, you're not catching hell because you're catching hell because you're Black. And I think that, you know, when you read Baldwin right now, when you look at Octavia Butler's work as a futurist, and you think about what she laid out in Parable of the Sower, Parable of the Talent, We're right there. And so the question is, how will we respond collectively?
Real talk. Baba Arnold, you're the elder in the room. Are you surprised we're at this moment? Did you think with all the work that you and others have put in the 60s, being a member of SNCC, you know, what we went through in the 70s, through the 80s, and living through the crack era, that we would be at this in the 21st century?
No, I'm not surprised at all, because this work began for me personally with Marcus Garvey. And my father was a Garveyite, and I came from Miami, Florida, where we worked collectively. I didn't understand that this fierce individualism happens until I came to California, which surprised me. I often tell the story about when they asked to sing the national anthem, I started singing, "Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring." And the other people started saying, "Oh, say, can you see?" I had no idea what they were singing. And they obviously had no idea what I was singing. I thought that they did not know the national anthem. And so my father was a Garveyite, and that has continued to this very day. We must do for ourselves. And this particular effort that we're talking about, the Circle, started with the Brotherhood of Elders 14 years ago, when a group of African men got together, and we've been meeting every first Saturday, unless it's a holiday, since we had our first meeting. And we have 30 to 40 to 50 brothers at any given time. So we've been talking about this, planning on this for a long, long time. And our commitment is to support our people. Integration was the worst thing that happened to us, because we lost so much trying to be with white people. And so now we are realizing who we must be, that we must get for ourselves. This is not against anyone else, but we must get for ourselves. As we watch other folk, if we watch Jewish people, they might not like each other, but they will come together around being Jew. We might not like each other, but we must come together being Africans. And so I'm not surprised. I think the catalyst was when Floyd was killed and white people saw the brutality. And that is what arrived us at this moment. There were two converging things. There was COVID-19 and racism 2020. COVID-19 will kill you within a short period of time, and it attacks the body. Racism 2020 has been going on since 1619, and it attacks the body, mind, spirit, and soul. And some of us have not allowed it to attack our whole body. And others of us have succumbed to it, trying to be like our European brothers and sisters. So no, I'm not surprised. I think that this is if you have two circles and you join them together halfway each, there's a window in the middle. And we're at that window because of COVID-19 and racism 2020. And we have to take advantage of being at that window.
And what is this? What does that window allow you to do at this point?
Well, the one thing the window allows us to do is have conversations that we haven't had before. It allows us to take down monuments. It allows us to change the flag. But what we must do is come together and create what I call a black agenda. We need to have an agenda. So if Arnold Perkins is running for office, I have a contract from the African American community that I must keep, and I must be graded on that. If I don't adhere to the contract, then I'm out. We don't have a contract with nobody. Each of us will tell the mayor a different thing. And the mayor doesn't have to do any of it, because the mayor can say, "This is confusion, I'm not doing any." But if we come together collectively, which is what the Circle is about, we called, our first meeting was 23 organizations that we called. And at any given time, we have 40 to 70 to 80 people on a call every 2 weeks, every other week.
We talked Saturday, mm-hmm, and I had mm-hmm. mentioned that, you know, here on Hard Knock, we do a number of shows and we talk to people. And so what you're saying is not unfamiliar to our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we've had the Dream Defenders and the Movement for Black Lives on. We've had the folks in Chicago on. We have folks from all types of organizations that have said we need a black agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder a couple of things. One, are we working in silos? Is it possible for people to all come together? And I think everybody's very sincere in putting together their agendas. I mean, Ice Cube just came out with a brilliant, you know, set of agendas himself. You know, I'm sure he works with people and he uses his platform. So I see some commonality in some things, but a couple of things come to mind. One, can we really come together when we know that there is an array of ideology? There are some people that want to reform the system, some people that want to completely overhaul it, some people that want to have their chance to rule. You know, they want to hold the whip, so to speak. Others are in a whole completely different place, and you'll hear similar rhetoric that is being offered, but their ideology can be exactly opposite. Some want privatization. Some, you know, some don't want community control. So how do you start to mesh that out, knowing that you have so many different wheels that are theoretically moving in a direction under the label Black Agenda?
Well, David, the first thing I want to say is we can't reform the system. It's like going to the beach and digging at the water's edge. It fills in constantly. You got to get way up on the beach and dig. If like you want to dig a hole, we keep trying to get down to the beach and dig, and it gets filled in. So I'm not a reformer. That's why I think that we need an agenda. We're starting in Oakland. If we could get people together in Oakland and have an Oakland agenda, that would be the first step. And I do believe that as long as we're African people, we can come together. I believe that there are common things that we can talk about, we can do within our own communities and spread. I'm certainly not trying to be involved in creating a national agenda. If we could do something for Oakland right now, and join together with Houston, join together with New York, whomever has commonalities. Let's not fight over our differences. Let's come together on what's common. And Bobby Gregg always has wisdom on these issues.
Mm. Well,
how do you bring people together when we have so many different outlets? And let me complicate that question a little. It's easy for you to say come together because you lived a little. Mm-hmm. I want my turn. I want to go to the nightclub. I want to hang out. I want to eat the steak. I want to see what it's like to drive that car. Don't tell me to fall back and get in the line. Y'all party. Why can't I party? And in many ways, Tupac said that. I could play a quote where he's like, you know, now it's my turn and you all want me to do something. You know, it's like, I want my turn. So how do we start to really get us aligned when so many distractions and attractions?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great question. I think it's a great question for the community. I think, you know, we ought to be having this conversation in forums around the city, around the country. I think what part of it starts with our sort of common purpose. Like, what is our purpose? And, you know, we have many of our leaders in the 1920s, 1930s, the Garvey folks that Bob Arnold just referenced. But there was a man named Hubert Henry Harrison who was one of Garvey's colleagues. And Harrison came to the United States as an orphan from Trinidad, became one of the most studied people in Harlem, helped come up with this idea of the new Negro man, the new Negro movement. And so what I noticed about that, because we talk about the Harlem Renaissance in terms of artistic production, Langston Hughes, Ornell Hurst, Paul McKay, Duke Ellington, but what the fundamental reason that you could have a Harlem Renaissance was, number one, you had a change of thought. Like, people began to think differently about themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of the coalescing has to come around our culture. Like, what are the things we really value? Do we value life? Do we value elders? Do we care about children? So that partying, I don't have a problem with partying. If you partying, but you balance that party idea with a purpose. Mm-hmm. And what Harrison talked about was you have unity of purpose. He says having unity of thought is challenging. That people will not have the same thought. You know, even birds that fly together don't have the same thought exactly about where to go. They go in a general direction, but they move around. time. He said you can never have unity of organization. Some people want to wear red. Some people want to wear blue. You know, some people want to wear different colors. But what he said was the possibility of having a unity of purpose. So if our purpose is economic prosperity, and our purpose is physical safety, and our purpose is educating our children along the lines of what we know they need, their history, their culture, that builds their identity, we have a much better chance of actually doing something collectively. And it's a project. This is not something that's going to happen overnight, but this moment could accelerate that. Mm-hmm. This moment with young leaders. See, the thing about being young is that you're less fearful. And that idea about, I want to be able to party, well, you got to go out and get it. If you want to be able to have that leisure time, then that means you got to be doing something productive the rest of the time. That means you have to have some way of creating wealth, some way of creating resources, and you get to decide how you want to spend it. So I think that this notion of a unity of purpose, a purpose that becomes crystallized in an agenda, that becomes crystallized in something that we write, that we share. During the modern civil rights movement, people talked about freedom, justice, and equality. And they had three or four key things they worked on. You could be in SNCC, NAACP, SCLC, more, but they said voting rights was key. So people worked on voting. People worked on public accommodations. Now, this is where the attitude part makes a difference. What if Dr. King had said, instead of integrating Holiday Inn, y'all gonna go to Pascal's, and we're gonna create a chain of Pascal's hotels and restaurants around the country for Black people to go to, as opposed to taking our dollars out of our community, the so-called Chitlin circuit, and we put the money into white business. That's a mindset. That's a mental model of, are you trying to have somebody else make you a cup of coffee, or do you want to make your own?
But I think you know, that's today that shows up in the form of inside-outside strategy. Let me work inside. I could change it from within. Others are like, let's work from the outside and get something of our own. And to King's thing, it wasn't so much that they wanted white folks to serve them coffee. It was like, I have a right, you know? Yeah. And so you were fighting for that right to walk across the street to the park versus going to the other park. Now, I may want to go to the other park, but I want to fight for that right. But with that being said, I really do think there's a mindset change, because I don't think King would have been opposed to building a Black business, but I think 40 years or 50 years after the fact, you have folks that are very actively and very aggressively wanting to not be around Black people because they associate Black people with being ghetto, hardship, poverty, crime, all these negative things. And so people actively will work in the interest of white supremacy in many ways. You see it in their actions. You see it when they sit in some of these elected positions and the people say defund and they say reform. You know, you say go to the right, they want to slow, you know what I'm saying? So how do we start to change that, or do we have to cut them loose?
Well, let's talk about what we can do, and that's where Daryl comes in. Because right. We can talk about what we can't do, and if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. And so I think we can. And so, for example, if we take the Black Lives Matter where it is right now as opposed to where it was last year, you have a whole set of people who are joining in, and this is an opportunity to move that forth if we sit down and strategize and plan to move forth. Daryl and a few friends came up a couple days before Juneteenth, and Joe, you can talk for yourself. They came up a couple days before Juneteenth, put out My Black Receipt. Their goal was to see how much within the African-American community, how much is spent on business with the African-American community. Their goal from June 10th until yesterday was $5 million. Let's see if we could spend $5 million in our community. Well, as of right now, they've spent $7 million. Gary, you can talk about what the young people, and also he has Broccoli City. It's a huge felt. It has anywhere from 25 to 30,000 this year that already sold 35,000 tickets. So, you know, there's a movement afoot with our young people as represented by generations. I represent, I'm 79. I'll be 79 in September. Daryl is 36. And so we have generations of the same family with the same principles that are moving forward. I'm kind of stepping aside, and Daryl is stepping up. And step up, Daryl.
Daryl, first question, you know, we'll talk a little bit about my black receipt, but do you see a sea change the way that Bubba Gregg and your dad are seeing it, Bubba Arnold?
I do. I mean, first of all, thanks, David, for this conversation. Mm-hmm. And Bubba Gregg and my father, you know, it's always good to, you know, just soak in the beer around this wisdom, which I've been blessed to, you know, come up in and around. And you and I have had conversations multiple times in the past. But I do see a change. And I believe in the power of us. I believe in the power of what we can do when we come together in particular. And I think oftentimes we talk about what we can do and we put the energy towards that, whereas my thinking is, I'm gonna think about what we can do and how do we do it. And that's how I'm gonna think off top. Like, I'm not even gonna think about the other stuff. This is a waste of energy and time, because we can argue about what we can do all day long. So that's where I tend to put my energy, and I think we need to put our energy is in that space. So I even think in this short time, I was just thinking, you know, through COVID, through all the injustice that we've continued to see but have been highlighted recently, I was just thinking over the past month and a half, 2 months, how much has happened. How much people have come together, how the Black Lives Matter movement, they say, is now the largest movement of all time in terms of looking at the amount of people that have moved. And so we need to be seeing that and understand what has been done, that we have been seeing, you know, things, whether it's flags falling or, you know, starting to see defunding of police or and we need reallocation of those dollars, being very specific of where that goes. But we're seeing these conversations that we've never had happen before. And we're looking at it and coming from the people power side. And I've always felt like we need to organize our people power on the ground as well as organizing our dollars as well. And when we're able to combine those two, you know, then we really talk. When we talk about the, you know, the Montgomery bus boycotts, it was a movement of people to stop spending dollars on the bus, and it started to move things. So we have to be pushing these levers from different angles to really be moving things as we want, because otherwise it's imbalanced and you're not getting all the full results because we're focused one on one more than other, where they need to really be moving together. I think I do feel like we're starting to see that, but we have to continue to move with intention and be very intentional about how we're doing it and being conscious of it, not just doing it haphazardly, but being organized and moving with intention.
Talk a little bit about my black receipt. Your dad talked a little bit about it, but what are we able to glean from that right now?
Sure. So myself and a few friends, Kezia Williams, who's an amazing sister that started the Black Upstart, is one of them. She really helped take the lead on this. So my black receipt came about as we saw we were going to do a day of abstaining from buying on July 7th. And we were like, that's great, but why don't, instead of not spending or abstaining, let's lead up to that by spending at black businesses and intentionally spending and buying with us, which isn't necessarily a new concept, but is putting intention behind that, as well as then quantifying those dollars. So let's hold ourselves accountable, not just say we're going to do it. Let's upload. We created some technology so you're able to upload your receipt, and then we're seeing the power of our collective dollar by doing that. And I think, you know, we're just the tip of the iceberg. Right now, our goal is spending $5 million and pushing $5 million towards black businesses and holding ourselves accountable to do that. And we're at $7.5 million currently that we push towards black business that have been spent at black businesses. So we're watching our dollars recirculate with us. And so that's going back to that, making sure that we're doing it and holding ourselves accountable. And then going back to our collective economics is seeing what we're able to do when we come together. And again, we're just the tip of the iceberg. This is just,
right. You know, but you all use technology. You all have a little app. Does that help? Because, you know, to be able to look at the app and go, wow, we got $4 million. Today we got five. And you made it a collective process. It's not like, you know, we got to wait next week for you to give the result. We can see it in real time. So does that help? And does that meet the moment and give enthusiasm and you know, and get people motivated?
I think it, no, undoubtedly it does. I mean, I think it's, you know, I check to see what the number is often. I think people are checking to see what the number is. And you're able to see what you do in a larger collective. So it's not just you. Like, you're putting in, and then somebody else is putting in, and you see your number as part of that whole. I think that's always exciting to see. And to the point of technology, we really need to be using our technology to organize ourselves, because we were in better contact now and in communication than really we ever have been. We have so much information at our hand, at our fingertips, and we need to be using our technologies to organize in ways that we never have before, using it as a tool. And so this is one way we can use it. You know, this is just a piece. We need to continue to do that and use our technology for us, so we're pushing ourselves, pushing everything forward.
Real talk. That's Darryl Porkins. You can look for his app, My Black Receipt, or their app. There's a team of them he's representing.
Yeah, it's just a website. You can just go to myblackreceipt.com. You just get to go to myblackreceipt.com, and everybody can plug in real easy.
Bubba Gregg and Bubba Arnold, I want you all to put on a different type of hat for a moment, and then we want to find out, so far from your conversations, what are people asking for? But you talked about, all three of you have said that you got to come with an attitude of what we can and not what we can't. But you know, that's a challenge, man. You know, the default position for many of us is to tell you that you can't. Oh man, you know, I'm not going to have a big house. You know, that's cool with the Black app, but you know, not everybody got computers. It's cool what you said, but you know, that's where we come from, right? How are you able to heal that? What steps can we take, people that are listening, to break from that mindset where we don't reflexively react to saying I can't and looking for the fault, but really, you know, reflexively look for the opening and upliftment?
Yeah, well, I think a big part of it is our story. Like, what's our story? You know, what do we tell about ourselves? And I think that there's so many examples in our history of where we could, when somebody else might have said you can't. And you can pull from almost any time period. You can take from almost, whether you're a man, a woman, however you identify, there's always somebody who made the point of that you could. And I think that we're short on our stories. You know, we got a little bit of attention paid to Tulsa, Oklahoma over this last few weeks. And when you think about what Africans did in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and created what they call the Black Wall Street, and that, you know, 30 square blocks of businesses and homes, and what people did in the midst of some of the virulent racism of the post-1800s and into the 1900s. And they did that anyway. And the other part of the story, I understand it, was that after it was burned and 300-some-odd people were murdered by white supremacists and with the help of the National Guard dropping bombs on people, they rebuilt much of that area. If you look at examples from almost any time in our history that you can find somebody, and you take up the story of Harriet Tubman. We gloss over Harriet Tubman all the time. We say, oh, Harriet Tubman, Underground Railroad. You think about the challenge of getting Black people to leave a plantation of relative, and I'm saying relative comfort, and say, we're about to get out here in these woods. We're going to be running from the dogs. We're going to be trying to get up to Canada or the North, a place where you never been. Do you know how many people probably was like, man, I can't do that. I can't go with Harriet. That's too hard. You know, I'm not trying to go. And so we have different ways of motivating ourselves. Some of the people got motivated because they said, you want this for your children? You okay with your kids living through this chattel slavery? Other folks got out on the road with her. And there's a story they tell about her where she says, you know, this guy wanted to turn around because his feet hurt. He was tired of walking, you know, and that's a reasonable thing. And she said, boys, go get the gun. And what that meant was, you're going to be free one way or another. You're not turning back. Right. You're going to risk this for the rest of us.
Right. So dead men tell no tales.
You got no tales. Yes, you got a choice, brother. And guess what? Miraculously, his feet stopped hurting. Miraculously, he was able to do a little bit more. So can't has to be part of a vocabulary that we don't really acknowledge. I mean, we have to tell our story in such a way and tell it in a way that we say, well, how did you know, some of our great basketball players come up. You know, Damian Lillard out of East Oakland over on Eve in 98. How did somebody probably told him at his height and at his weight, you can't do that. Man, how you gonna be in the NBA? How you gonna be an all-star? But he did. So I think part of it is just our own self-confidence and reminding ourselves of who we come from. And I'm not even pushing this line that we're kings and queens, because everybody can't be a king. That's the interesting dynamic about kings and queens. Generally, you have one, right? Why can't we just be Africans? Why can't we be human beings? Why can't we be honorable people? Because everybody can do that. Yeah, everybody can have spinners on their, you know, 27-inch rims. Everybody don't want that, right? Right. But what everybody does want is to eat every day, have a safe place to live, have their children grow up in without fear. And if we decide there's some things we can do, we just got to get to it.
Right. Anything you would add to that, Bubba Arna?
I think that we are conditioned around can't. So I think about the little boy who begged his mother and father for a dog. I said mother and father purposefully, for a dog. He gets the dog and he wants to take the dog to the store. Mom says, no, you can't take the dog. And so he finally, over time, she lets him take, and he takes the dog. She said, make sure you tie the dog up. Do not, because you're gonna lose it. So he ties the dog up, he goes to the store, and one day he forgot to tie the dog up, and the dog stayed right there. What happens is we stay right on camp. We give people the permission to talk negatively about ourselves because we talk negatively about ourselves. And we have to start talking positively about what we can do. If you want to have what you've never had before, you must do what you've never done before. And we have to be about doing what we've never done before. If we keep doing the same old things, we have the same old narrative, and it goes nowhere. And the narrative is, well, Davy D, we can't do this, Davy. No. Davy, we can do this. We must do this for our survival, for our children's survival. My work is not for Daryl. My work is with Daryl's grandchildren. That's what I'm planning for. That's what I'm all about. I'm not about Daryl. I'm about Daryl's children. And we set the course now. Down the road, we will be different. If we think about where we were 200 years ago and where we are now, it's a different place.
Right.
So we have to, no one is going to put our trajectory together but us. And that's so we got to do it.
That's real talk. I think the attitude that I see with a lot of people that are breaking from the default is like, maybe it's an Oakland thing, maybe it's just a pride thing, but it's like, word, you're gonna smash on me? I'm turning up even more. I'm gonna turn up. You know, now we're really going. I was tired, but when I seen that thing in Martinez the other day, oh, we turning up. I had a sister on yesterday, and she lives out there, and she was talking about, you know, yeah, they was yelling All Lives Matter, and they was passing out flyers and everything, and then she perked up. And she's like, I wasn't an activist, but I am now. You know, I formed the march, and we're going to, you know, and I think that spirit is awakening, because that's the, they often said that they would try to beat the spirit out of us, you know. But I think it's alive in a lot of people, like, nah, man, you know, like you did this, we going even harder in the paint. So I feel you on that. I know we're running out of time, so let's get to the parts of this agenda. What have you all seen so far? How can people become involved? What are some key things that in the initial talks that you have been aggregating that we need to know?
Well, I'll start. I mean, some of the things that we've come to are, one, supporting Black businesses. And so we're really, really pleased and proud of Daryl and his friends for the work that they're doing. There's been at least one estimate that says that, you know, we could lose as many as half of our Black businesses in Oakland as a result of this pandemic. And so we want to make sure that we support those businesses, that the folks who were able to get loans from the federal government for payroll plan protection, great. But we know some people fell through those cracks. So one part is supporting Black business, providing people with resources to, if their businesses suffer damage as a result of that very small set of looters and shooters, you know, to help those businesses. A second one example is out of education, that we know that literacy continues to be a big challenge, that we need to make sure our children can read, that our children can compute. And so what we can do through this project is creating a literacy program, creating more opportunities for mentors to work with African-American youth who might not see the importance of being in school and doing distance learning. You know, when the COVID pandemic first caused schools to close, there was something like 10,000 of 35,000 kids who weren't showing up on distance learning. And some of that has to do with access to internet, some of it has to do with access to computers, some of it has to do with access to having an adult who's saying, this is important, like, this is something you need to do. On the health side of it, you know, we just had this event at the lake. I still haven't kind of gotten a report back on how we did, but we know the energy was good. We had, I think, 3,500 masks that we could distribute for free. We had messaging. Bob Arnold and others organized, you know, sound trucks, so we had messages moving around to say, you can be physically, and this is the language, see, even simple things like changing our language, that we can be physically distant. So physically distant, but socially connected.
Yes.
Socially, not socially distant. We don't want to be socially distant. Mm-hmm. We know we like being around each other. This is the thing about black people. We like hanging out. We like being at the lake, at the beach, wherever, right? So, but that messaging piece is on top as well. So, you know, the ideas that are coming out have been, you know, how do we support the messaging? How do we support folks like Cheryl Ward and Regina Jackson and the OIDC? They have a Facebook live stream on Friday nights that they're doing, and getting the word out. So some of this is like, there's these small pieces that we want to move to that bigger plan, that what we're calling that Garvey plan, to get us to, like, what are the big things that we need? How do we deal with no cops on school campuses in Oakland? You know, it's great to get those cops off those campuses, but what do we do to make sure that kids are safe, teachers are safe, that mental health issues that often go unaddressed get addressed? So as we push out of this immediate set of actions, we want to push to those big things. And we think that we've got a great opportunity, given the time, when you put, you know, this show on and other people are talking about this, that's going to encourage people. That's going to encourage us to do something.
Real talk. What would you add to this, Bubba Arnold?
Well, I'll say that right now on this call, we probably have access to 100,000 people. If I look at Brockton City and they bring in their events, 35,000 people. If I look at what you do, Brother David D, if I look at what Baba Greg does, we have a huge audience out there that has some familiarity with us and know what we're about. And so we have a large audience that we can continue creating a narrative that's different. That's one. Secondly, at the lake, we had 7,000 masks and we handed out 7,000 masks in 2 days. We could have handed out more masks, but we had more at the lake at the time. And so that's an effort where our young people, and we stipend our young people. We got to pay our young people who are struggling. We stipend our young people. If you spent the day there, you got $100. And we had a lot of young people. So that's another effort. Creating opportunities within our community. Now, one of the things we know that because schools are being closed down, that a lot of our children from poor families are going to struggle and suffer. That's something the members of the audience can do, take upon themselves. And the last thing I'll say is, we started in January putting together a Black agenda. COVID slowed us down, but as a part of the circle, we're picked back up. And so we are going to develop a document so that we can look at and agree upon. We can have Zoom meetings about that document. And so in Oakland, we are going to have something. And I'd like to see us nationally have an agenda that, whether it's buying from Black business, that's part of the agenda. Educating our children, that's part of the agenda. And these are things that we can do. Our churches have huge congregations. They could get involved. So we need to have a national movement and really, really put into practice, Black lives do matter.
Right. Real talk. So let's do this. How can people get involved and contribute to this conversation? When do you all meet? What's the website we can turn to?
All right. So if folks want to work with us, you know, you can go to see us at www.brotherhoodofelders.net. and you'll see the work that we're doing. We're an African-American men's group, and we're actually working with a group of women to create something similar. So that's one way. If folks want to make a donation to the ARC Fund, they can do that by going to the website of East Bay Community Foundation. I think it's actually East Bay, EBCF.org. I'll double check that, make sure that's right. So those are two of the ways. And then also just wherever you're in an organization that is doing something, make sure that other people know about it. Make sure that other people hear about your work. And I think talking to our journalists, yourself, Pendarvis Harshaw, others who are broadcasting out into the community, so that people know there's plenty of places where you can join in. Many of the organizations that we're working with the ARC Circle.
What is ARC?
Our school. African American Response Circle, and that is the group that we helped convene starting eight weeks ago. It's been a while.
April 1st.
It's been a while.
Right.
So those are some of the ways that folks can get involved with us.
Okay, so we will do that. And Daryl, you have any last things you want to say before we bounce on it?
I believe in the power of us. I know what we can't do. I appreciate you for having this conversation, bringing us together. And we just got to keep at it, stay active. You know, this is just a tip of the iceberg. People should feel uncomfortable when they're not involved and engaged. And that's what we need to do, is create not only a narrative, but a culture where people, if they're not doing positive things and they're not active, they're not engaged, they're not in their community, they should feel uncomfortable, just like racists should feel uncomfortable right now, too.
Right, or at least feel like you're missing out.
Exactly.
Like, man, I need to be involved. So is there a meeting coming up or anything like that that people can get involved, or just go to the website and we can see
that? If you go to the website and indicate that you're interested, we can get you involved.
Okay.
Because this group, we've been reluctant to put the meeting dates out there to the whole community because we've been hacked. I mean,
folks
hack into meetings, just like, you know, some white supremacists knocked down a Frederick Douglass statue somewhere on the East Coast. So the backlash is coming. And so we know that we need to have some bit of security, but folks know how to get in touch with us if they go to the Brotherhood's website. Many of the people that are around that table are known, you know, folks in the community. They can call you, they can call us. We'll get folks in. If you want to be involved, we'll get you involved.
Okay.
I'm going to say one other thing, Brother David. I really do appreciate you and the commitment that you've given to our community over the years. I mean, you've been a stalwart. I mean, you stood by us, you stood with us, you pulled us together. And I just want to thank you, my brother. I want to bless you from all the ancestors. I want them to live in you and continue creating you as a messenger. My brother, thank you. I love you for who you are and what you do.
I appreciate that. Well, remember, I only do that because Baba Greg ran up on me and said, hey, man, you better get it together, or you know, you don't want to see us out in these streets. I was like, really? It's like, man. I was like, all right, man. You know, he is taller than me. I was like, all right, man, I got it together.
Oh, that's funny.
That was the motivation, you know.
Hey, what we say, by any means necessary.
That's right.
All right, fellas, thank you so much. We appreciate the work you're doing. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN, at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris, Juwan, Kim. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, you just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me? Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio. Kind of crazy, though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready for the steel gray beef. Say please. Save you a seat at the table where they break bread, making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, unable to please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Hey, it ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio. You are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
West Coast.
So, I've been seeing a lot of things talking of the people making commentary. interestingly enough, the ones I've noticed that have been making the commentary are wealthy black people making the commentary about we should not be rioting, we should not be looting, we should not be tearing up our own communities. And then there's been an argument of the other side of we should be hitting them in the pocket. We should be focusing on the blackout days where we don't spend money. But, you know, I feel like we should do both. And I feel like I support both. And I'll tell you why I support both. I support both because there, when you have a civil unrest like this, there are three type of people in the streets. There are the protesters, there are the rioters, and there are the looters. The protesters are there because they actually care about what is happening in the community. They want to raise their voices, and they are there strictly to protest. You have the rioters who are angry, who are anarchists, who really just want to up, and that's what they're going to do regardless. And then you have the looters. And the looters almost exclusively are just there to do that, to loot. Now, people are like, well, what did you gain? Well, what did you get from looting? I think that as long as we're focusing on the what, we're not focusing on the why, and that's my issue with that. As long as we're focusing on what they're doing, we're not focusing on why they're doing. And some people are like, well, those aren't people who are legitimately angry about what's happening. Those are people who just want to get stuff. Okay, well then, let's go with that. Let's say that's what it is. Let's ask ourselves why in this country in 2020, the financial gap between poor blacks and the rest of the world is at such a distance that people feel like their only hope and only opportunity to get some of the things that we flaunt and flash in front of them all the time is to walk through a broken glass window and get it. That they are so hopeless that getting that necklace, getting that TV, getting that change, getting that bed, getting that phone, whatever it is that they're going to get is that in that moment when the riots happen and if they present an opportunity of looting, that's their only opportunity to get it. We need to be questioning that why. Why are people that poor? Why are people that broke? Why are people that food insecure, that clothing insecure, that they feel like their only shot, that they are shooting their shot by walking through a broken glass window to get what they need? And then people want to talk about, well, there's plenty of people who pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and got it on their own. Why can't they do that? Let me explain to you something about economics in America. And I'm so glad that as a child, I got an opportunity to spend time at PUSH where they taught me this, is that we must never forget that economics was the reason that black people were brought to this country. We came to do the agricultural work in the South and the textile work in the North. Do you understand that? That's what we came to do. We came to do the agricultural work in the South and the textile work in the North. Now, if I right now decided that I wanted to play Monopoly with you, and for 400 rounds of playing Monopoly, I didn't allow you to have any money, I didn't allow you to have anything on the board, I didn't allow for you to have anything. And then we played another 50 rounds of Monopoly, and everything that you gained and you earned while you were playing that round of Monopoly was taken from you. That was Tulsa, that was Rosewood. Those are places where we built black economic wealth, where we were self-sufficient, where we owned our stores, where we owned our property, and they burned them to the ground. So that's 450 years. So for 400 rounds of Monopoly, you don't get to play at all. Not only do you not get to play, you have to play on the behalf of the person that you're playing against. You have to play and make money and earn wealth for them, and then you have to turn it over to them. So then for 50 years, you finally get a little bit and you're allowed to play. And every time that they don't like the way that you're playing, or that you're catching up, or that you're doing something to be self-sufficient, they burn your game. They burn your cards. They burn your Monopoly money. And then finally at the release and the onset of that, they allow you to play and they say, okay, now you catch up. Now at this point, the only way you're going to catch up in the game is if the person shares the wealth, correct? But what if every time you share the wealth, then there's psychological warfare against you to say, oh, you're an equal opportunity hire. So if I played 400 rounds of Monopoly with you and I had to play and give you every dime that I made, and then for 50 years, every time that I played, if you didn't like what I did, you got to burn it like they did in Tulsa and like they did in Rosewood, how can you win? How can you win? You can't win. The game is fixed. So when they say, why do you burn down the community? Why do you burn down your own neighborhood? It's not ours. We don't own anything. We don't own anything. There is, Trevor Noah said it so beautifully last night. There's a social contract that we all have, that if you steal or if I steal, then the person who is the authority comes in and they fix the situation. But the person who fixes the situation is killing us. So the social contract is broken. And if the social contract is broken, why the f- do I give a f- about burning the Football Hall of Fame, about burning the Target? You broke the contract when you killed us in the streets and didn't give a f-. You broke the contract when for 400 years we played your game and built your wealth. You broke the contract when we built our wealth again on our own by our bootstraps in Tulsa and you dropped bombs on us. When we built it in Rosewood and you came in and you slaughtered us. You broke the contract, so Target. Hall of Fame. As far as I'm concerned, they could burn this to the ground and it still wouldn't be enough. And they are lucky that what black people are looking for is equality and not revenge.
Hard Knocks Radio 94.11 KPFA. Oh yeah. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah.
Thank you.
Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.7.